Hi, I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris. And this is the EdShift Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the EdShift Podcast. Really thrilled to be joined today by Jody Britton. Jody serves as the Director of Learning Technology. She is with an organization called Team for Tech. I'm really excited to dive into more all of the incredible work that they're doing. She brings over 20 years of experience in educational technology, digital learning, and skill development to her role at the organization. Since joining them, she's seen her work with the community of practice highlighted at South by Southwest, EDU, which is where we cross paths, at ISTE, and is a finalist for the QS Reimagine Education Awards at the Wharton School of Business. Before her role at Team for Tech, Jody worked in a senior leadership role at Metri Group, and she managed edtech products of national and international significance. She launched Digital Learning Pathways, which is a learning platform for professional learning. It's connected into the ISTE standards and used by education. All of that wasn't enough. She holds a PhD from the University of Kansas. So thrilled to have you here with us today, Jody. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we're going to talk a bit today about, you know, the idea of course, the work that you do at Team for Tech, and this idea of, you know, where do we need to focus for a more equitable future? That's a really big question. But let's dive in a little bit more to the work that you do. What do you wake up every day thinking about and focusing your work on at Team for Tech?
Yeah, so Team for Tech we act as a nonprofit impact accelerator for nonprofits working specifically in education and more specifically with learners in under-resourced communities. We've been around 10 years. This is our 10-year anniversary.
And our Happy anniversary.
Thank you. They've done some incredible work, and it's fun to be part of the organization. For the last 10 years, we have very much focused on bringing skilled volunteers into the lives of the nonprofit organizations that we partner with and helping them leverage that skill set to really amplify their own work with learners. One of the things I love is we make a 3 to 5 year commitment to those organizations. So it is not a drop some computers off and leave. It is not a quick, let's go do a training and say we've done our part. Like, this is a very long commitment of we're going to provide funding, we're going to provide training, all of this stuff. This last year, we introduced our online community of practice, which I'm really excited about. We're just over a year old. We have over 500 nonprofit organizations from more than 80 countries, which is huge. And, we haven't done a ton of marketing, so this is mostly just word of mouth. Gosh, what do I wake up thinking about? I wake up thinking I should be MacGyver. Remember that old show, MacGyver?
Yes.
We have about 35% of our global educators that are actually employed by non-state agents, like nonprofit. I don't think we realize that in the U.S., like how much of our global work in education is actually not funded through government agencies. If all of those nonprofits that serve our kids globally went away, we would find ourselves having about 350 million additional learners to educate. These nonprofits play a huge part in the overall global strategy to provide quality education. So what do I wake up every day is, how can we really MacGyver solutions so that in place of adequate policy, access, infrastructure, and funding, we can still bring agency to those nonprofits so that they can ignite and unleash all the innovation that they have in their organizations for all the learners in their communities.
A lot to think about.
Yes. A lot of numbers.
It's such an amazing undertaking, because I imagine the diversity, if with the global reach that you have and the different regions that you're in, there's widely varying need, widely varying access, and your work is to support all of them. So I'm curious, maybe, like, are there common themes you see related to education globally? And then also, like, this is really amazing work that you're doing. Tell us more about how you're actually making it happen in all of these places.
Yeah, absolutely. I think common themes are definitely inequity, definitely a focus on those employability skills. I think the UNESCO GEM report this year, the Global Education Monitoring Report focused on ed tech. We just released a brief of that document. It's 500 pages of really great stuff. And, you know, and they pointed out in there that we are seeing more gains when we engage our kids globally in problem-based, project-based work where they can use technology while amplifying that human-to-human connection, you know. We see that a lot in all of our nonprofits that we work with. You know, they're not trying to set a kid in front of a tablet and an app and say, learn. it's not that, it's not a magic tool. What they're trying to do is build those employability skills, build up that conversation, build up those connections, and really have those moments of inspiration for the kids to move forward. We see that a lot. Just the cost of internet. I've worked in a lot of places and worked with clients all over the world before coming here. I did not grasp. I knew how inequitable the internet access was. I did not grasp how expensive the internet access was. You know, we're doing some analysis right now to just identify how much of the $19 million in grants that we've provided over the last 10 years, how much of that money has gone towards just covering internet access, you know? And I'm excited to get that data back because I think it'll be an important story for us to tell, an important story for our nonprofits to engage with as well. Gosh, how do we do this? We are tiny and we are mighty and we drink a lot of coffee. And we all have either M&Ms or Starburst or something like that on our desk. outside of that, we have a fantastic team of people that care, you know, and the human ingenuity, I think, is the lever for change for our organization.
One of the things I want to kind of pull out of what you said is that you talked about, you know, you're not just dropping technology in there. Like, I think there's sometimes this misconception that technology can be this magic bullet, and if we just like get X or Y, then everything will be better. And you've talked about how like you really need to be there for a stretch of time to develop, evolve, implement practices. We talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think Niagaki, who's our hub coordinator in Africa, she tells this story about one of our nonprofits who got a 3D printer donated. And I love this story because I think it exemplifies so much of the reason that we make a long-term commitment. That 3D printer sat there in a box because they didn't know how to use it. And they didn't know how to, they didn't actually have power. They didn't have an outlet to plug it into, you know, like the very basic things that a lot of, you know, a lot of people have such great intentions, right, of donating. Mm-hmm. But I would kind of call them to action to think about what comes next. You know, we can't drop and run. You know, yeah. We've got to dig in. And you know, as Niagaki and our other hub coordinators are out and visiting all of our partners face to face, there's a lesson there for us. You know, in looking around, noticing what do they need, what do they have access to, what are they, you know, what are they struggling with? And just having those really brave, somewhat intimate conversations. And there's a lot of vulnerability there, you know, on both of our parts of we're not the savior swooping in, you know, but we are a network and we can expound upon that network to bring you solutions, you know, and create some sustainability there. So I think there's, you know, there's a lot of attention on our team to make sure that we're checking ourselves, that we're listening. We use a very much a co-design framework and a co-creation and a co-learning framework where, you know, I learn just as much from everyone in our community as they probably learn from me. And I love it. You know, there's a lesson in every conversation, and that extends to across our teams, you know. But if we keep learning from each other and growing like that together for 3 to 5 years, that's a lot of growth and a lot of opportunity. Now our challenge is, how can we share all that learning in our community so it can be scaled and sustained, and others can pop in and learn where they want and where they can and where they need.
How are you thinking about the idea of sort of standards and, you know, framework and sort of, you know, sets of common things? And, you know, you said where a lot of the work they're doing is an absence of policies and is an absence of some of these kinds of things. But obviously, you know, you're also very well versed in things like the ISTE standards, and there's plenty of other, you know, frameworks out there from other organizations. How do you think about those and kind of providing, you know, providing a baseline for the work?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's taken us 10 years to really kind of get our heads around where we want to throw down and where we want to invest. ISTE has been a great partner. Carolyn and the standards team is like, they came in and did this amazing, like, here's your international standards. How can you use those? You know? And I think for our team, we have spent a lot of time with our community members developing and articulating localization of those standards. So it's not only, these are the ISTE standards for students, but these are the ISTE standards. These are some of the challenges that might occur in under-resourced context. And this is still how every child can really master that ISTE standard, even within those limits. And a lot of it is just that spark of conversation of, oh yeah, I saw a kid do that in my program the other day, but they didn't have that, and they didn't have that, you know. We just did a review of employability skills frameworks. We looked at 19 different countries, and we're able to finally drill down on 7 of those employability skills that are, you know, that I think are going to become a stronger focus of ours in terms of how we support, how we connect, how we drill down, you know. So more to come on that, I think, from our organization. But, you know, right now we, you know, we're involved in the Basic Education Coalition and the EdTech working group there. Our ears and eyes are on the ground looking and trying to see what's coming up. The thing that I've noticed just in the year that I've been here is that there's not only one way to say things, you know? Mm-hmm. So a lot of times we're looking across country, across context, across environment, across program type. Some of our nonprofits actually run schools. Some of them serve 20 kids and are doing really, really deep work in robotics or coding, you know? So how can we create frameworks and select frameworks to share that are kind of enlightening, empowering, and engaging to their work in a way that doesn't necessitate them relying or adopting a specific mindset? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
A little bit?
Okay. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
I think that's huge, because you are working with such a diverse audience, and you're able to support them in a way that helps them grow and kind of reduce some of these equity gaps and further their students without changing that kind of inherent place and culture that they're coming from. And I think that's really important.
Yeah,
it has been. We designed our curation metrics early last year, and those, we used so many different tools that are out there already in terms of ed tech tool selection. You know, if you need a lesson in Americanization, it's a good thing to look through. Because so many of them, I'm like, yeah, they don't have power. That's not going to work. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we notice how spoiled we are sometimes when we look at those things. But our curation metrics really help us to and have helped us to identify tools, resources, and partners that are ready to do this work. You know, are they online, offline? Are they, you know, do they have the systems in place? Does their tech support have a WhatsApp number? Does their, you know, all these things are articulated in those curation metrics. Our internal team and our volunteers both use those in their work with our nonprofit partners. And that's becoming, I think, more and more relevant as we move forward.
I think that's amazing. Like, I think it, to your point of like the Americanization of things, like we don't often think about that. Like we kind of think about where we are and how things work here. And so I love the idea of being able to understand which solutions are going to map to which places and how to kind of support that. What does it take in to accomplish that? Like how did you develop the metrics and how are you really helping both? How are you working with the companies who are providing the products and how are you working with the nonprofits you're working with to bridge some of those gaps?
Yep. For me, I'm a big fan of collecting those stories and those use cases. We just finalized our EdTech partnership program. So now our EdTech, you know, kind of co-conspirators, I guess I would say, you know, have an opportunity to come into the fold and work through those with us. A lot of people are very much interested in coming in and running quick implementation cohorts to see what can happen. You know, what would happen if a platform came in and just went through an implementation cycle with three of our nonprofits in India? What would they learn? A lot. I promise, a lot.
Sure.
So there's, you know, there's a lot of that. We've spent this year trying to figure out what those metrics are. We did a huge comparative analysis, broke that down, did a test, retest, looked at all of the things that we've shared over the last 10 years and tried to apply those metrics to see if we could uphold them, you know. Mm-hmm. And we've been having some incredible conversations with organizations globally, several in London that really work with the ed tech company and developer piece on that digital equity and inclusion. So some stars are aligning that are going to make it possible for us to kind of interject this really important group of people in our education in a stratosphere and see what we can do. You know, I think there's so much there that can happen, especially with a lot of the new AI tools that are coming out. So I'm excited about that in the next year.
That is like a whole wormhole we could go down here with like AI and how that benefits and impacts some of these regions you're working in. We could explore that. And then I'm also really interested in the work that you're doing to support girls and women, because that's a cause that's very close to Katie and my hearts. We are always looking for ways to bring empowerment there. So what do you want to unpack?
Well, I mean, I think with the AI thing, we did probably in February, we started a 3-part training series on ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. And just to dive in and explain, you know, what it is, how you use it, how it's not good to share your prompts, like, you know, all the things, all the tricks, all the tips and tricks. We went through like a general productivity series. We went through a teacher productivity and use series, and we even delved into the student use series a little bit, which is cool. You know, like I don't think that, I think our kids are seeing opportunities that we are not noticing yet.
Yes.
And it's not about cheating. It's about changing the, you know, if it's about changing the question mm-hmm. we ask, changing the question that they ask, and digging a little bit deeper. But we did that, and we had about 300 nonprofit organizations globally participate in that. A lot of individuals who said, this is a game changer, you know. Now, even though my English is very broken, if I wanted to apply for that grant, I could use this and put my some my best effort English together and then see what it can, what, how it can help, you know? There are some of our nonprofits that are using ChatGPT to help their learners kind of amplify their resumes and restructure and position. Some of our professional networking tools that we have in the U.S. are not always super friendly and accessible to our larger global learners, you know, and they're finding ways to create websites, create resumes, all those things so that they can beat the bot, I guess you could say, you know.
Love it. It's a huge empowerment piece.
Yes. Yeah. We're really drilling down this next year on the bias piece, you know, how we can hopefully feedback loop into some of the developers to make sure that we're doing all that we can there. So.
And I think you mentioned earlier, you know, talking about like employable skills as well, like mastering AI and prompt and question creation. I feel like that's very much something that our kids are going to have to know. And then you've given some really concrete examples of how that's going to benefit students globally in ways that they can utilize it.
Yeah. On the women and girls front, there's probably three organizations that we work with that have my heart, I guess you could say, in big ways. I think Refugee, they're in Nairobi. They work with refugee girls and young women. We just had an amazing group of volunteers from Cadence, one of our corporate partners, out there. And our last on-site project with the volunteers was really helping them bring, they have this great like empowerment and wellness program. And it's hard for some of the young women to get to the physical location. So Cadence volunteers, you know, very short sprint, built them this whole tool that's going to allow them to have all of those physical classroom barriers out of the way. So now they have this whole new e-learning platform for their learning and wellness programs. And, you know, over 900 girls are in that empowerment program alone. That's going to help them develop skills in coding and entrepreneurship, in growth mindset, in reflection, in overall wellness and well-being. And to see the, I think for me, like when we get the video back, all the video, we get so many hours of video because our amazing video crew is on site all the time. And to see the faces of the learners that are being served light up with, and not only light up because they're excited about the opportunity for them, but light up because somebody is listening to them. You know, there's this one moment in this video when one of our volunteers, who happened to be a white older man, sitting next to this refugee young woman, and she's telling him what she doesn't like about the interface. That's a moment. Excellent. Like, lady, that is a moment. That is a moment, you know?
Yeah.
And so that is one that I love. Another one who we actually talked about at ISTE is Ektara. They are in Calcutta. And that project was very cool. Ektara works with under-resourced, what in India they would call slums, girls and young women in slums, to really focus on their use of digital skills, creativity, and STEM. So with that project in particular, one of our community members is 100 Cameras, who's a U.S.-based nonprofit, and they do this amazing work with digital photography and social emotional learning and building reflection skills and image, self-image, all these things. Like their programs are very, very cool. And so we were able to combine Ektara's philosophy about developing the skills with young women, 100 Cameras in their programs, and then Adobe came in with not only tools, but volunteers. And oh my gosh, the pictures.
You can only imagine.
This one little guy took the best pictures I think I've ever seen in my life. And they were all of him. And it was this whole little self-portrait extravaganza. And he was awesome. Some of the, one of the young girls, two of the young girls, I should say, were running around taking pictures and taking pictures of each other in like these meaningful places. And, you know, and they ran home to change, and they, you know, like all of these things that, you know, are giving their storied voice and bringing that story to life. And I think, you know, the work that Akhtar is able to do in an incredibly challenging context to bring not only joy, but value to their own story, is, you know, is something to be reckoned with. I think it's a pretty cool thing. Another one is Maya, who's in Guatemala. You know, I think they, I think the thing I always remember when I'm thinking about Maya is they're really focused on that quadruple discrimination, you know, poor, rural, female, indigenous, like the young women they serve, cover them all, you know, and, they have a program called Girl Pioneers. They get tablets. They have online and offline curriculum. They're doing all kinds of work, 100% focused on kind of a gap year approach, where the girls are developing their digital skills, digital pedagogy, and their knowledge base so that they can pass the National University Entrance Exam. Like, we can't get them to school if they can't take that test, you know, and pass it. So, Maya is really focused on that in Guatemala. Again, amazing things. We just had a team of volunteers down there. I can't think off the top of my head which partner that was with, but we just had a team down there that really focused on helping them develop their digital pedagogy, right? And how to use technology effectively and how to use online systems effectively, so that it's more of like a mobile learning than an e-learning experience, you know? And wow, I mean, the difference. Great things are happening. It's fun to be a part of.
What I really appreciate about each of those examples as well is the idea that some of those things, and this sort of came into my mind when you were describing sort of the work that Akhtar did and kind of the cameras and the photography. So many of those things are things that, you know, people in quote Western countries would take for granted, right? You know, how many teenagers would just take for granted that they could go to the mall with their friends and hang out and take pictures, or go, you know, down the street, or, you know, these types of things, or that, yeah, like, of course they're going to pass their, you know, final exams and or their entrance exams to get into university, because, you know, they've had all these opportunities. It's such a good reminder of how privileged you know, so many of us are, and how much work there is to do and how much opportunity there is. And like, just, it also makes me so excited to think about how the world is going to change because more people are having opportunity, and especially because more young women are having opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I think, now more than ever in my professional career, I think I'm more cognizant of how small our world is, you know, like, it's really pretty small. Like, you know, I'm trying to get a laptop for somebody that lives outside of Uganda, you know, I'm like, who do we know that we can get a laptop delivered to Uganda really quick? You know, it's kind of a funny world, but it's, you know, I'm just reminded that our world is pretty small. And I think we have to stage our learning experience so that every human walking this planet has the opportunity to contribute in a meaningful way, you know, and it's not always the same way, you know, it's not always the same way. But when I see, like, it's almost like a confluence of like energy and capability, a little bit of self-direction and a little bit of self-determination all thrown into a really cool pot, of opportunity with some of this stuff. And I will say too, like, as much as the experiences that we're observing on a daily basis remind us of how privileged we are, I think And when I say this to our nonprofit partners, they always kind of give me that "you're crazy" look. But for me, I think they're raising the bar for us. You know, mm-hmm. I think they are. Like, how many of our elementary schools in the U.S. are doing digital reflection and storytelling programs? You know, LAUSD is using 100 cameras tools right now. Love it, love it, love it, love it. Want to see more of it. You know, so it's like, how can we elevate these stories with a, you know, not just a like recognize your privilege, but also a look what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're not just like handing a tablet to somebody and say, pass the test. They're building this whole ecosystem and experience to support that an entire generation, you know?
Yeah.
And I want us all to be able to look at technology and have those stories to share. And, you know, for me, it's a, hey, look, you know, they have a van with a generator with some computers and, you know, whatever satellite Wi-Fi it is, you know, I don't remember the one that they use, but like, look what's capable, you know, mm-hmm. In the middle of rural Kenya with some human force, you know?
Yeah.
And let's learn from it and do something cool with it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So many pockets of hope.
Yes.
Which, yeah, I love that. I think it's again, an important reminder, you know, of the power of our next generation, the opportunity to, solve for some of the challenges that we all are facing together, you know, regardless of what box we happen to fit on into, that somebody drew on a map at some point in time. We're all in this together.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, and I, you know, we have a wonderful partnership with Raspberry Pi Foundation, and I think over this last year that partnership always kind of elevates for me, because I know so many teachers here in the States that use Raspberry Pi tools, and wow, like even to show the video of how Raspberry Pi tools are being used in context. Across regions, there's just so much there. There's a story to be told, you know, of just the depth and the creativity, and you know, it's like those kids are pumped up. Like, they're not only pumped up because they see a robot, which they never thought they'd do, but they're pumped up because they got to build a robot, you know, and now what? You know, so I think that, you know, the now what story in a lot of this is, let's see what we can make happen.
Yeah. I love that. This is such an amazing conversation, and I feel inspired. Like, I like how you've kind of challenged us to think about how do all of us do more? How do we all kind of shine and take the things that we're good at or we are passionate about and use them to serve others so that we open windows to possibilities that learners across the globe hadn't thought of. Like, it's just really impressed. This was such a great conversation.
Yeah. Jody, thank you so much. I do have one final question for you, Jody.
Yes.
That we like to ask on the podcast. And that is, what has been the best part of your day today?
Oh gosh. Wow. The best part of my day today. One of our partners in London, who we've been going back and forth with about doing some really deep work in AI, came to the table with about $50,000 to help make a bunch happen. So that was not a bad
day.
Love it.
But yeah, that should have been like right on the top of my head.
Yeah.
That wasn't a bad moment. You know, I think, the more we're small, the more we can partner with people that have really diverse dynamic teams that are like-minded, then great things can happen. And I think that happened today.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank
that
you.
Is just like those golden days yes. in nonprofit, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. It wasn't a bad day. It wasn't a bad 15 yeah. minutes. It wasn't bad.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. Thank you so, so much, Jody. So appreciate your time and energy here with us today. And yeah, I look forward to continued conversations and continued inspiration with all the work that you are doing and enabling.
Well, thanks so much, ladies. We appreciate it.